So I should show us for film talk about Shnei Mikra V'Echad Dargim. It's a fun topic to talk about, but it's something that has a couple of connections to Parsha Shmos, as we'll see. It's two, perhaps three, depending on how you count, and it's always an issue that could use a little chizuk. So it's a good idea to find talk about it, then we could all use chizkin. I've heard pointed out that it's recorded in Shulchan Aruch, Siman Resh Pei Hei, Chaim Rafa, which is perhaps to suggest that it's something we're weak at and could use a little chizuk. So this opportunity of Parsha Shmos, where there's a number of connections, might be a good opportunity. So why is Shmos connected to Shnei Mikra? So just right off the bat, there is a Levush, that's what's most often quoted, the Levush in Aruch Chaim, where he suggests that the opening words of this week's parsha, Ve'elah Shmos, has a connotation to it. Rashi Tevis, V'chayev Adam Likros HaParsha Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. So Shmos by itself is Rashi Tevis for Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. But the Levush is telling us that there's even more to it, that Ve'elah Shmos, that connotes this Chiyuv, Chayiv Adam Mikros HaParsha, Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum. There is a additional remez that's a little more elaborate, perhaps much more elaborate, and that's in the Baal HaTurim. Baal HaTurim has a remez that goes as follows, that Ve'elah Shmos B'nei Yisrael could be read as a remez for the Adam, Hashalomei HaSeder, Shnayim Mikra, V'Echatar. B'kol Noyim Yashir, Yechia Shonim Bravos Aruchim Olam. Person who learns the Parsha, Shnayim Mikra, V'Echatar, in a pleasant voice and sing it, will live more life. That's a much more elaborate Shittavis. And in the Sefer that came out a little while ago, Eli Baruch, Shechem Rabbi Eli Baruch, so he suggests that the difference between which of the two Rashi Tevis you like maybe reflects how you relate to Shnei Mikra V'Echad. So is it a Chiyuv? That's how the Levush is assuming. So focusing on this idea of Chayiv Adam Saparsha, which is the implication of the Gemara, to be fair. So that suggests that it's an obligation, while perhaps the Baal HaTurim is seeing it as more of a good thing to do, seeing it as something that's advisable and a source of bracha. Well, in any event, both of those are derived from the Gemara Maseches Brachos on Daf Ches, where the Gemara does make this point that one should always do Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum, and that one should specifically do this on pace with the Tzibur. The Gemara talks there about somebody who wanted to go over the entire Torah, but wanted to do it on Erev and Kippur. He was told that that's not a good idea for two reasons. One reason is that we're busy on Erev and Kippur, we have to be eating and drinking, we have no time to have the whole Torah on Erev and Kippur. But also, we're supposed to do so on a schedule. We're supposed to do so on track with Tzibur, and therefore to try to stuff it all into one day is going to be missing that crucial aspect of it. It's got to be specifically the Nazi. So in that context, the Gemara says that holy national other functions, something you're obligated to do. But also has this language of bracha that the Baal HaTurim is picking up on, that one who does this, Marichim lo yom of Mishnasa, who does this is a source of blessing for those who perhaps cynically suggest that the reason that it's midah k'neged midah, the reason that you have a long life as a bracha, fulfilling Shnayim Mikra, is because you'll need a longer life. It takes a lot of time. It takes a lot of time to go through the parsha Shnayim Mikra V'Echad Targum every week. It's very time-consuming. So in order to provide for that and to correlate to that, so that's the bracha of Marichim Lo Yom V'Shnosa. So that also connects to one of the fundamental questions that this din, presumably a din de Rabbanan, Chazal, to go over the parsha in this way. So why exactly did they ask for this? Why did they institute this thing? So there are a number of theories that you can find, and one that's perhaps worth mentioning first, even though it's the least likely to be the dominant position of the halacha, it mimics force, but it doesn't make it into Shulchan Aruch's idea. But that's the view of the Ravan, that the Ravan's position is that this was instituted for those who can't go to shul. So if you're not able to be in the Beis Knesset to hear the Kriyas HaTorah, so this was essentially the home version. This is the way to fulfill the notion of Kriyas HaTorah at home. And therefore the parallelism here is Shnai Mikra, why read it twice? Because they used to have, well now we still have, they have a Ola and a Balkore, so that represents two people reading Shnai Mikra, and the Echa Targum, that's what they used to have in the Turgumon. So to parallel the Meturgamon, so that is the Echlet Targum. So that's how he understands that the idea of Shnai Mikra of Echlet Targum is meant to be a home version of what they do in Shul for the Kriyas HaTorah for those who aren't able to make it. So that's a big limud zvus for those who aren't able to do Shnai Mikra successfully or find it too daunting. So to say, well, it's only a chiyuv if you're not able to hear Kriyas HaTorah in shul, that would be a good limud zchus. The problem is that it's not actually a view that has too much popularity. It's not brought in Shulchan Aruch. And Rav Kook wrote, actually, that it's davka the opposite, that he thought this was kind of missing the whole point. That the intention of Chazal here was to have two tracks. That the assumption many achronim have based on Ban and others, is that Kriyas HaTorah in general is a chovas hatzibur, that it's not an obligation that is on the individual, and therefore if somebody personally misses Kriyas HaTorah, so we don't obligate him to find some way to make it up, because it's an obligation on the tzibur as a whole. In general, we try to be a part of what the tzibur is doing, so it's not something to take lightly, but it's not a personal obligation that we make you fulfill on your own, if you happen to miss it. So he understood, Rav Kook, that there's specifically two tracks here, that there is the Chovas HaTzibur of hearing Kriyas HaTorah in Shul, and Chazal instituted to parallel that a Shnai Mikra V'Echlet Targum to be the Yochid version of that. So it doesn't make sense to say that one could replace the other. They are specifically set up to be two different tracks. So that's one kind of understanding of what exactly this is meant to be. And there is a general discussion that presumably this is here to be some kind of a Talmud Torah kind of plan, perhaps way precursor to Daf Yomi, that this was Chazal instituting a communal Talmud Torah schedule that we should be learning on the same schedule as the Tzibur is going through the whole Torah, so we should go through the whole Torah on that same schedule personally in order to be able to absorb it better. This is how the Levush writes, that Kidei Shehei Baki B'Torah. Tzlach adds that here you're going to have a 3-ply Levush, Mishnai Mikra V'Yachat Targum. And he writes, Chut HaMisholah Shlo B'Meheri Yinotek. Well, it's the Pasuk that you're going to have a 3-ply rope. It's not going to rip, it's going to be reinforced. And the Aruch HaShulchan adds that the obligation of Talmud Torah is both Limud and Shmiah. So therefore, we want to hear the Kriyas HaTorah. Before that, we want to have the Limud beforehand. It's perhaps similar to what we have in Yeshiva. We have the notion of the Mar Makomos, the Tzon and Seder, and then the Shir afterwards. And I also note the parallel, the Mar Maseches Ota, the Mamadayin Beis, which talks about a three-pronged process of the Torah being transmitted to the Jewish people, Klalos Supratos, Namur B'Sinai, Mishnah Kol HaMoed, Nishdal Shalu B'Arab. So that whole idea of the Torah being transmitted in three stages, so perhaps the three prongs here represent that. And the Shuvah Son Yosef, he points out especially that the idea of Nishdal Shalu B'Arab Tzmov, the third time, that's the beer, so therefore the idea that the third time is a Targum. So that perhaps could also fit. But there is also a notion that you have that some of the commentaries have, that perhaps Kriya, that the idea of Shnei Mekriyat Letargum is related to Kriya Satorah, in that it's meant to be an active preparation for laning. That once upon a time, so it used to be, that if you got an aliyah, it meant that you had to actually read the parsha. And nowadays, we're not so confident that everybody who gets an aliyah necessarily is ready to read the parsha. So we have nowadays, so we have a professional Baal Koreh who is able to save the Ola from embarrassment. And that's what we have instead. But once upon a time, the Ola indeed was going to be expected to read. So therefore, the suggestion was that this is going to prepare you. Perhaps any contemporary Baal Koreh will be very surprised at the suggestion that having gone through the Parsha twice and then with one Targum is going to suffice for preparing for laning, but that's the possible suggestion. So that has itself nafkamina, because the question of whether you can rely on listening to Kriya Satorah as one of the readings, so according to this interpretation, presumably you would have to have done the Kriya before. You'd have to have done the preparation of Shnei Mekriyat Letargum before Kriya Satorah happens in order to be prepared for it. But this also could give a little bit of an explanation to the idea that the Gemara has of Ma'arich HaYom B'Shnosa, some connect this to the idea that the Gemara has at the end of the Maseches Brachos, that there are certain things that cause one's life, Rachman Aslan, to be shortened. And one of them, the Gemara says, if he's called to the Torah and he doesn't go. So why would somebody refuse to go to the Torah if he's called? So maybe it's because they used to expect that the person who's called would lane and you're not ready to lane. So if you're going to go through the Torah Shnei Mekriyat Letargum, and that will prepare you to be able to lane, so then that's going to be a countering of this idea that Chalila, a person's life would be shortened because he has to turn down an aliyah. So it's an interesting suggestion as well, and that's one track you find there also, that the purpose of Shnei Mikra is to prepare you for Kriya Satorah, maybe not necessarily in terms of the learning, but in terms of actually being a part of the laning. Just mention one other idea, which I can't explain because it's beyond me, but the Sam Sofer, in his commentary to Maseches Chulin, so he has an explanation of Shnei Mikra al pi derech hanistar, different approach, which I couldn't really say over, but just to be aware, so that's also a part of the mix. You also find that as a possible interpretation. So this is the Sam Sofer solution to Chulin, Dachot Chasim Beis, and take it there and see if you understand. So in any event, so this idea that it's connected to the Kriya Satorah also has a nafkamina, that there was a tshuva in the Tshuva Sadasha that the Shulchan Aruch quotes, and Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva about, that it was assumed that we don't have an obligation of Shnei Mikra for the extra lanings, for that which repeats the lanings that we do throughout the year. So for the Parshios, or for Yontif lanings, which repeat the same lanings that we have, so we don't assume there's an obligation of Shnei Mikra Vechatar for that. So perhaps that's consistent with the idea that the goal is really Kadei Sheyei Baki B'Torah, that we want to make sure that you know all the Chumash, so we're trying to create the structure where you will be studying it parallel to what the Tzibor is laning, but it's not necessarily connected to the laning. So if there was a laning that is additional, that is repeating something which is already covered in the cycle, so then maybe we don't have an obligation to do Shnei Mikra V'Yachat Targum for that. Just add here that I thought there was an extra level of application of some said so far, than at the onset of COVID 3 years ago. So when the shul shut down, so there was a whole discussion about how to handle Parsha, and whether we should have kind of quasi-lanings at home without a minyan, without Sefer Torah, and there's a concern there that may create the impression that that's actually a Kriya Satorah, and that's a problem. But there's also a svara that maybe one should be choshesh to the Rabban L'chumra, that even if we can't rely on the Rabban L'kula and assume that that gets us out of Kriya Satorah I guess that of Mishnah Mikra rather, because we go to shul, the Ram say that we don't have to Mishnah Mikra because it's only there for those who miss shul, so we can't rely on the Kula, but maybe we should adopt the B'chumrah that specifically when I mean, go to shul, so that maybe Mishnah Mikra should be insisted upon at that time as a way to kind of fulfill at least that view that we can make up for the Kriya Sa Torah through a Mishnah Mikra Yechatagos. That was something to think about. But also have another nafkamino b'chumra, that point that we just mentioned, that even if we normally wouldn't require Mishnah Mikra for those repetitive parshas, for repetitive names that are not part of the parsha cycle, but maybe if it is intended to make up a few Kriya Sa Torah that we don't have, so then maybe there is such a notion that we should do Mishnah Mikra for that as well. And that also had a nafkamino specifically for COVID, because if you recall, when COVID hit in March, that was just at the beginning of the Dalet Parshios, when that question would be relevant. For those who were affected early on by COVID, it actually impacted Parshios Zohar, but certainly Parshios Parah, so the issue of the Dalet Parshios, whether you should do Mishnah Mikra for that, relevant, and then there was Pesach right on the heels there as well. So that question of Mishnah Mikra for extra readings, so normally we assume not obligated, but it's an interesting question. If we're not going to hear the Kriya Sa Torah Jewel, and if there is a notion of looking for a Baal Mechumra, so then maybe there would be a concept of Mishnah Mikra for that, just a thought. Any actual conclusions, but just something. So what's also quite striking is that the Gemara goes on to say something more, that after the Gemara tells us that there's an obligation to read Mishnah Mikra, so there's a strange phrase after that, it's hard to understand, that the Gemara says, V'afilu ataros v'divon, that even that pasuk ataros v'divon, so that also has to be done in Mishnah Mikra. So what's pshat on that? So that is a pasuk from the end of Sefer Bamidbar, from Tzmaseh, where the names of cities that are listed, this is part of the whole lot back and forth, with the Shvatim that wanted to stay behind. And there the Gemara says that this also has to be read in Shnei Mikra V'Echatar. So the Rishonim will try to figure out, well, what's the Chiddush? Why is that different from any other pasuk in the Torah? Why do they have to be told? A filu ataris v'divon, ataris v'divon also has to be read in Shnei Mikra. So Rashi says it's because these are names of cities. Rashi, right? And there is no targum. So therefore, maybe you would think that it's enough just to read it two times. Skip that. And you don't have to read it a third time, so we see, no, that's not true. So Tosfos over there raises the question. And this is the extra connection as well to this week's parasha. Tosfos asks, if we want to be taught that if a pasuk is just names and there's no targum, that you even have to do Shnei Mikra by that, or you have to read it three times. So there's a better example. There's a much more recognizable and clear example rather than invoking this pasuk that people won't recognize as much. But what about the beginning of our parsha? What about the beginning of Shmos? So we start off saying Ve'ele Shmos Ben Yisrael Havoyim Mitzrayimu, and then we list all the Shvatim, Ruben, Shimon, Levi, Yehudah. So why do we not use that as an example? Because there the Targum doesn't tell us anything different. There are Pesukim there which are just names of Shvatim, and the Targum's not going to add anything. So that would be a better example of something which doesn't have a Targum. Why didn't the Gemara use that? So Tosfos suggests, well, maybe it's because that's too good of an example. That there really is no targum, so maybe that would be an exception. But when it comes to Taurus V'Divon, so there are targum you can find, even if it's not a targum, and we're being taught that you should actually look for that targum. Maybe that's the finish. Now, parenthetically, there is an interesting point there, which is perhaps a little depressing, that if you open up our Chumashim and you look at Unkos, so you see that Unkos actually does have different words for Ataris V'Divon. It's Machlalta, Malpeshta, something like that. That it doesn't just say Ataris V'Divon there. So if the Rishonim are telling us that the Targum doesn't say anything different for Ataris V'Digon, so that's a little depressing, because that seems to suggest that our Unklus is not actually real Unklus, which is unfortunate, because the yellow suggests that Unklus is essentially Sinai, that it has a very holy tradition back to it, so if we don't have the perfect Unklus, so that's something to think about as far as that's concerned. But in any event, so that's how Tosfos understands that there's a reason why we don't have Reuben and Shimon. That's not necessarily the best example, but that would have a different thing. But Ataris V'Digon, so that's it's perhaps a better example. So then there's a discussion in the Rishonim, so regarding something like Reuben and Shimon, where we really don't have anything that's any different. So should that be two times, or should that be three times? So that's in the Machlokas Rishonim. Talk about this, so they note that that seems to go to a question of how to relate to this takana of Shnei Mikra Ve'Echad Targum. Should we say that really it was a takana to read the parsha three times, just once you're doing it a third time, so it might as well be Targum, so we'll understand it better? Or is the idea that it's really that we're supposed to do it two times, but we also want to understand what we're doing, so if there's a Targum, we'll have that as a third time. But if there's not a Targum, so then we won't necessarily have to do it the third time. So that's as far as how the Rishonim talk about this. But it's interesting that if you look in the Achronim, so there are many different approaches in the Achronim that go in a completely different direction, and they have different ways of saying this. And some suggest that, or maybe when it comes, and Slav talks about this, that maybe when it comes to Reuben and Shimon, these are names of the Shvatim, so that's important, but the cities that were cities in Sarah, maybe we don't necessarily know that it's important. Again, it's an Aishas commentary that's found later in Sachs Brachas, and notes that the Gemara says in Sanhedrin that we're not supposed to mention the names of cities that were idolatrous names unless they're actually mentioned in Chumash. That's the case here. These are idolatrous cities, so perhaps we shouldn't be using the idolatrous names of cities. And Chiddush is that if it's a Targum, so then maybe that's considered to be on the same level of connection to the Chumash, and therefore we're allowed to say it. So that could be, but there's also a very controversial interpretation of the Torah Tumima. And the Torah Tumima puts forward the idea that, just to say it in a more controversial way first, and then we'll work backwards, that this pasuk you could leave out and it wouldn't make a difference. Or that's what you would have thought. You would have thought you could leave this pasuk out, and it wouldn't matter. And that's why the Gemara has to come and tell us, no, that this pasuk you can't leave out. So that sounds very radical. What does it mean to say that you could leave out a pasuk from Chumash and it wouldn't matter? So many tried to figure out what's going on here. So my grandfather, his commentary to the Torah Tumima, Shiva's Nefesh, so he pointed out that if you look in the commentary in the back of the Gemara, there's a commentary of the Blazer Moshe Hurwitz. And if you read that, so you'll understand it a little better, and it's likely they're connected. Blazer Moshe Hurwitz was actually the father-in-law of the Torah Tumim. So the Torah Tumim's father-in-law's commentaries, and says it differently, and maybe this is what it's getting at, is that if you were to look at this week's parasha, so let's say you were trying to skip the Targum. You would say that, okay, Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, I don't need to read the Targum for that because it's just names. So then how's it going to work? So you'll start reading Aramaic, Yulan, Shmas, Shah, these are the names, and then you're just going to skip the names. There's not going to be any names there. It's not going to make sense. It's going to not work. The context forces you to say the names. So even though the Targum is not adding anything, but you're going to have to read it anyway in order for that paragraph to make sense. But there is one pasuk in the whole Torah, he writes, where the Targum doesn't necessarily tell you anything different, and the context doesn't obviously force you to read that pasuk. You can read that pasuk out, and it would seem like it would still make sense. Then you might think, okay, this I don't have to shine up with the Targum on, because the Targum's not telling me anything, and the context isn't forcing me to do it. But the Chiddush is, no, that even there, that also is telling you what you think, that it's part of the context in a way that you don't necessarily appreciate. And therefore, we have to read that as well. So that's an interesting interpretation. And that actually is taking aside in a whole other issue. So there was a machlokis in the Achronim about how one should do Shnai Mikra V'Echatar. So what exactly do we talk about when we say you're reading the Psukim twice with a Targum? So this was a Sofik in the Magen Avraham and the Shla and others, where they debated whether it should be Pasuk, Targum and Pasuk. Maybe there's a certain logic to doing it that way. You read the Pasuk and you read the Targum so you understand the Pasuk better, and then now with that greater understanding, you go and read the Pasuk again. Or it should be Parsha, Parsha. And we don't mean Vayera, Vayera, but we mean the separate sections of the Torah, delineated sections, each Parsha. Maybe you should go through that whole section and then go and read the Targum. So this interpretation of the Torah Tamima, he's presumably assuming that you're doing the whole section once, because otherwise there wouldn't be an issue with the context. It would be forcing you to read one pasuk at a time. So you, this, let's say in this week's Parsha, you read the Elish Mos Bnei Yisrael, and you translate that as a Targum. Then you read the next pasuk, and there would be no reason to say the Targum. So the whole idea that the context is forcing you, that's assuming that you're doing the whole sections at a time, and that's what's requiring you to have this issue. Rav Kook, in his comments, like Rav Kook did Gemara's, so the Tovroi, so he's quoted there as suggesting that this may also especially be relevant to the question of Kriya Shema that comes to Kriya Shema. So some raise the issue that if you're going to repeat that pasuk of Shema Yisrael, so it sounds like that's a problem. Tell us that Ha'omer Shema Shema Rishaskin also. If somebody repeats the phrase of Shema, so then that looks like he's talking to two Kshiyas, and that's a problem, so we say not to do that. So some raise the question, so what about Shnayim Mikras? That pasuk twice is a violation of the din. Frank Greenblatt has a truth about this. Others talk about this. So some suggest, no, it's only when you're davening, saying it there with Kabbalah, but it's a problem to repeat it. But it's not a problem. Cook suggested that maybe especially for there, you should do it the whole parshia, so you don't have that problem that you're repeating Shema. So that also relates to a few other issues that were talked about as far as both the Seder and as far as the notion of Shnai Mikra. For example, it's a whole discussion whether there is a concept of Tashlumin for Shnai Mikra. So if you miss the Parsha, so can you make it up again? So this was a discussion shown in quote the view of Rabbeinu Simcha, that if you miss a Parsha, so you can make it up until Simcha's Torah. Perhaps that's why they call it that. It's named after him, that Simcha's Torah. He's the one who allows you to make up the Torah at least until that day. So you could call that either a Kula or a Chumra, depending on your perspective. That people would rather say, I'll go smile about the Karbana thing next year. So the notion that you have the opportunity to make it up until Simcha's Torah is also quite a responsibility. But that's the idea that many have. And then there was an interesting discussion in the Achronim, Sham and others, about if you're making up the Parsha, so how should you do it? So let's say you miss Parsha Shnos and next week Parsha Be'er, so you have both Shnos and Be'er to do. So some say it makes sense you should just go in order, do Shnos and then do Be'er. And others say no, that it's treated like Tefillah. Now when it comes to Tefillah, we have the concept of Teshulman. So if you miss Shacharis, so then you have two Shmoneh Esreis for Mincha. But the halacha is very machbid that the first one should be the Shebizmano, the one that is that week, that time slot rather, so you should be Mincha first, and only afterwards you should make it up with the Teshulman for Shacharis. Some understood it's the same halacha when it comes to Shnai Mikra. So next week, if you miss this week, so next week the area, your responsibility is first to do Parsha Be'era, and then after you do Parsha Be'era, so then you can talk about making up Parshas Shmos. So that was also a whole discussion. And it goes a little bit to how you see things. Do you see this as a Chogos Nimud, where maybe it makes sense to make an order? Or do you see it as kind of a Chogos Ayom kind of situation, where it's like Tila, and therefore maybe you should keep it in order of Tila? So this also affects the question of Avelos. It's on Achogos and Mishon, but that as well, or Rashi, Mark Button, Tour of your day and Sintav, about whether one can do Shnai Mikra during Avelos. So the Rosh and the Torah, they allowed it. That was against the view of Ariel. And it relates to that question, do you see it as a Chokas HaYom kind of thing, or do you see it as a Talmud Torah kind of obligation? And there were those who suggested that, especially if you do have this view, that it's possible to make it up. So then maybe you should say that that's what you should rely on. Davka shouldn't do it during Avelos. That's the view that Cook had in his Chubas in our Mishpat. And the Ravaja is a truth about this, and he goes back and forth, and he essentially concludes that one can be Mekel and see it as a Chokas HaYom and assume that it can be done during Avelos. That also connects to the whole discussion. It's an extensive discussion literature of what exactly is called Matzibur. The very active should be precisely Matzibur, and when exactly that starts, and when exactly that ends. And so somebody thinks that it's a double parsha, does both parshias, and realize only one parsha, so I think we should do it again next week another time. That's an extensive discussion how exactly to relate to that. And also one of the major issues that is central to this whole concept is what exactly do we mean when we say that you have to do targum. So what exactly is the meaning of targum? So here the Shulchan Aruch brings two dais as to what is considered to be targum for this purpose. That one possibility is to go back to what we mentioned before about unkos. The Gemara says Gilad unkos has a special quality to it. It's Sinai and conveys a interpretation on a very ancient level. So maybe that's what they meant by targum, which should be specifically unkos. But there's also another possibility that there is an idea here that we should just know what the words mean. So therefore, maybe we should have to do a parish that specifically helps us to understand that those who don't speak Aramaic conversationally, so making up lists is not necessarily going to be the best recipe for that. So the Shulchan Aruch says that Yerei Shamayim should do both. Should have both Rashi and Dumbus. So that's become the most common practice, to do the Parsha twice and to do Rashi and to do Unklus following this view of the Shulchan Aruch. In the Shuvas of Rav Yosef Chaim Donnefeld, Salmas Chaim, he talks about the fact that maybe he could have thought that since we're dealing here with the Rabbanan, we should say something to Rabbanan Makulmuk, we're not sure what it is, so why should we be obligated to do both? We should be allowed to be Mekel. And he discusses that maybe, raised the question actually, thought maybe this should be connected to the Ran in Masechus Pesachim, talking about Dalek Kosos, where the Ran says that you have to do Hasebo for all four Kosos, even though it's a Machokis in the Gemara, whether you have to do Hasebo for the first two or the last two. So the Ran says, well, we don't have a choice other than to do both, because even though we're talking about Adin Rabbanan, and you might have thought something to Rabbanan Lakula, but what's that going to mean practically? So if it means we do neither, so then we're just canceling out Adin and something to Rabbanan Lakula. That. And if we're going to do just one or the other, there's no svara to do one or the other. Each one makes as much sense as the other, so therefore the only option is to do both. So the suggestion was, maybe that's the case here as well, that even though we have the din d'rabbanan, so we're not sure what to do, but we can't just say, okay, so we won't do either and get out, and cancel the din, and nor does it make sense to do one over the other, so therefore we end up doing both. So that's the most common approach, but it can be very difficult also. So I think it's important to appreciate that there is a takana of chazal here, so have also the mentality of tabasta bubal tabasta, that it doesn't seem like that's the baseline chiyuv to do both. So to probably look for the way that one can most realistically fulfill the din, at least in a minimal way, try to do it in a way that most enhances their learning, is probably the most advisable. I've heard in the name of Rav Shechter Shlita that, first of all, as far as Rashi, that even according to this idea that we should do in Rashi, so the purpose of Rashi, clearly that's not what Chazal specifically had in mind, because it was long before Rashi's written. And if you look at the Gemara and Brachos, it has this din. So Rashi over there commenting on the word Targum, but Rashi doesn't say Kigon Mi. He has to read my commentary. So it's not Chazal didn't specifically Rashi, but presumably Chazal meant that commentary that would give us the Pashut Pshat. And so we understand that Rashi is the method for that. But as it's noted, so it doesn't mean necessarily that all of the words in Rashi, goes into one medrash, that necessarily has to be a part of this obligation. It's also advised people that it doesn't necessarily have to be Rashi forever. Maybe it should be Rashi for a few years until you perform what Rashi says, and then maybe move on to another parish would be more helpful in terms of one's understanding. So perhaps, if you think what to say, that as a goal here in how to do this, is that we should keep in mind that one also, we also have the takana, so forget whatever method is going to get us in fulfillment of the takana. So as far as the question of whether it should be pasuk or parsha, this way that makes not necessarily as important to make sure that we are fulfilling it on some level. And then we want to combine that with the practical value of learning the parsha as well as possible. And that will give us the most foundation in terms of rashi, in terms of the Dibrei Chazal that are connected, all of that so crucial for our understanding of Torah and for our background in Parashat Vayikra. So as much as there is this tremendous difficulty trying to get it all done, but there's also a tremendous opportunity as well. So to bring us back to how we started, there was the balance between the Levush and the Balaturim, that yes, there's the notion of Achayiv Adam, so Parashat Shnei, so there's a view here, and that's something that we have to appreciate. Then there's also the more cheerful version of the Balaturim, the other Meshalom and Seder, trying to put the Targum, combining Yashu, Yichyas, and Rabbis, and the Olam, as a source of bracha, somebody who's able to happily go through the Parsha and try to learn as much as he can, and try to have as thorough an educational experience as he can through the Sechir. So that's itself a source of bracha. So hopefully we'll be able to do both, maybe to fulfill the mandate, and also to educate ourselves as much as possible, and we should be able to realize the words of Chazal, and that should be a source of schus for us, and a schus for life for all of us, and we should add all the time to fulfill this very important well, we should get all the brachos that Chazal promised. That's your thing.